Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of, I know, right? Things that recruiters care about. So here's what I want to tackle. And it's amazing how the zeitgeist works. It's amazing how the zeitgeist sends you what you need when you need it. So COVID's wrapping up. People are starting to do well. Job market's doing great. A lot of you guys are reaching out to me through Ask Danny's or personal emails, and you're saying, I had this amazing idea to do something really crazy pre-COVID, but of course doing it because that was prudent and I didn't have the finances and it was an existential threat to my livelihood. And so now we're through it and you're starting to get vaccinated and that idea is still there, but you still have no plan to do anything about it. So the question is, does the idea suck? Do you suck? And you ask me for help and I don't have an answer because people think successful people can lay out a step-by-step plan for you. And just as I was trying to figure out how to fake an answer, this amazing new book comes out. And the zeitgeist rewards you for reading. It's really not even fair to call it a book because it's really more of an experience. And once you get it, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's called Risk Forward, Embracing the Unknown and Unlocking Your Hidden Genius by Victoria Lebaum. Now, some of you are going, Victoria Lebaum, I know that name. Yeah, you probably were at the NAPS recruiting conference where she was the keynote speaker and crushed it. She's crushed a lot of keynote speeches. She is in the Speaker Hall of Fame. She went on to do consulting work for Fortune CEOs. Before that, she was a performing artist and a very, very talented one. And she has written this book and she's come on to help me out and talk about this. Victoria, it's so good to have you on.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So help me with this. So people say to me, you must have known exactly what you wanted to achieve because you achieved X. And it was so much fun to read your book and realize that's what the whole book is about, that successful people don't necessarily know how they became successful and didn't have a plan. Where did this idea come from of risking forward? Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So ultimately, as you mentioned, having worked in the performing arts and then worked with C-suite executives, entrepreneurs, artists at very high levels in Hollywood and on Broadway, I discovered that many of them, like myself, hadn't had a plan or a goal exactly, that things had unfolded in unexpected ways. And I'd noticed that for myself, I'd suffered for so many years thinking that I'd screwed up because I hadn't had a plan or a goal. And I noticed there was so much suffering out there for people who thought that they couldn't move forward till they had the map figured out. And this is what I wanted to address.
Yeah, there's this great part of your book where you say that, you know, people think successful people know exactly what's going on. But you said they all have these phases where they have no idea what's coming next, but they're really good at hiding it, which I thought is so true. You actually can make a successful person uncomfortable when you ask them how they became successful, because there's this hidden imposter syndrome of, I don't know, like they feel they were just lucky. And yet you're not sitting in a writer's garret and writing this based on observations of successful people you've been around. You yourself had a very non-traditional path. You're the only speaker I know who was also in a Super Bowl commercial. Can you share with people the path that you went through to become this author?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you called that out, because so many people did ask me over these last 10 years, how did you get to be where you are in your life? And they thought, like you addressed earlier, that I must have had a plan. And I said, I just kept doing what was next. And that's really the story of this opening part of the book. The whole opening chapter is called Not Knowing. And, I came through the arts. My friends gave me a hard time. I wasn't married. I didn't have a particular career in mind. I was trying a lot of different disciplines, writing, performing, comedy, character work, filmmaking, directing, and of course, mime. And people really couldn't figure out what that pigeonhole plan was for me. But over time, each of those unfolded. And as you know, and as I talk about a little bit in the book, is the opening, just to launch the whole portion of the rest of the book, is I witnessed 9/11, which for many of us is like the pandemic. It's that cultural shift that happens very rarely, and it gives us an opportunity to reevaluate and rethink, and certain opportunities arise in that. And that's what happened for me. I had someone come and invite me to speak to speakers, and I'd been a performing artist. I thought, oh, that's cheesy. I don't want to do that.
Right.
But I had so much fun. And I think anyone listening here will find out this is true for themselves as well, that your career unfolded through these unexpected invitations that came along, or windows that you stepped through, and into the next opportunity you went.
Yeah, and I loved how in the book you said that, you know, I think people are so afraid that they don't have whatever, the CV or the background. The idea of you saying, if you can't fix it, feature it. And the first time I saw you speak, it brought me back to the first time I spoke, because when I first spoke, everybody was standing behind a podium reading note cards, and I thought it was so boring. And like you, I had a theater background. So I thought, I can't go up there and say I've done this 1,000 times. I haven't. But what I can do is, to someone who had been in the theater, to not have like costume changes or marks on the floor that I had to get to before I did my dialogue, speaking seemed freeing and easy. And when I saw you perform the first time and you did a professional mime, which blew people away, I thought, I'm sure there was part of you that said, well, this can't be done. And then it turns out that's the part of you that everybody wanted to see. Like, if you, in the book, you say, if you can't fix it, feature it. There was no way for you to say you were as experienced as these other speakers. That doesn't mean you weren't better because you were different.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because, you know, we each have deficits in our background or places where we feel we haven't quite matched what others in our peer group have. We say, oh, they have X and they have Y and I only have Z. And what you're saying is exactly it. You look at Z and say, all right, let me take that. And sometimes we do it unconsciously, purely out of survival. You know, we think, this is what I got, I better go with it. And sometimes it can be strategically done. But I believe that those gifts that we have, those experiences, are really what distinguishes our brand and our work from others. And whether I'm teaching Rock the Room, which, as you know, is the program on presentation skills, on webinars and meetings, on Zoom, on camera, where I help people take what's different about them and their own original ideas and express it the way only they can, or Risk Forward, which is the book we're talking about, which is essentially your life and your career and your choices as a leader or as a parent. How do you bring that out?
Right. And I love that when you said that not only is there no step-by-step formula, but that you are the formula. Can you explain to people what you mean by that?
Sure. Yeah, there's a section of the book where I talk about a concept called the prism effect. And I always have to articulate the word prism, because over years of talking about it, people thought I said prison, like Jay. So now I have to go prism. Yeah. So anyway, the prism effect, which is, we think of the way light works, and inside of clear light is the full spectrum. And so what I tell people is, these different parts of yourself, you know, you have a particular past, or, you know, an experience before your current job doing X or Y. Those are valuable to harness as analogies, as stories, as insights. You might have had a certain life challenge. Those are worth tapping into. And so often what we do is we look around, and whether it's our website or our business card or our collateral or the way we present ourselves or dress, we start to shave off parts of who we are to fit into a mold. And the executives that I've worked with, the top entrepreneurs, the leading artists, don't do that. You know, they take it and they use it. And that's really what this book is about, is what makes everyone unique is worth embracing. And the reason I call it Embrace the Unknown is that most of the time what's out there is not a replica of what we've seen before. We're not represented in the world because we are the new representation of that particular formula, which is us.
Right. So our audience are recruiters. They are salespeople. They are giving, including in my office, as you know, they're given daily activity goals, and they have some sales manager, you know, sort of an updated, smoother version of Glengarry Glenn Ross saying, coffee's for closers, hit your numbers. These people live for the goals that are dictated to them. And there's this fascinating part of the book, folks, you gotta read this whole experience of the book, but this idea, Victoria nails the myths that we all live under. And one of the myths that I found fascinating as a salesperson, is this myth of goals. And you talk about how, you know, most people say you have to have goals. If you don't have goals, you're part of someone else's goals. And you say, no, goals themselves can be problematic. Tell me about that. I think that's great for people here.
Yeah, well, I work with a lot of sales teams, and that I'll apply the goal setting issue in that scenario, since that's the one we're discussing here. Oftentimes with sales events, you know, sales meetings, sales leaders, you'll hear them say, all right, you have to make 100 cold calls, and that becomes the goal. You have to get an X number. And what happens then is the person's actually just focused on going through the cold call. But if you were to say you have to create, you know, 100 really engaging, meaningful cold calls, that's a very different kind of goal. And so people check the box, whether it's I want to make $1 million, but they forget to say I want to make $1 million while also taking care of my health, for example. It's really the type of the goal and how we approach it. But also, you know, it depends on your role. Oftentimes, there are goals that totally lead us astray when we adopt other people's as our own, whether that's the home or the type of vacation we take or the type of toys we have. And I mean toys like big toys, you know, golf membership, a yacht, you know, a big fancy media set. And so ultimately then people aren't really living their own life. And I see this in the entrepreneurial space as well, where people feel that I have a client who came to me for a VIP coaching around risk forward because she was just on this track of making more money and doing more. And she was in the internet marketing world. And so launching and then launching again, and everyone's saying, you know, you can go bigger. And she was exhausted. And she said, I need your help just to risk forward and stop. So sometimes risking forward looks like standing still, just because you think, I need a little break. And when she came back a few months later, she rocked it.
Yeah, that reminds me of the part of the book where you talk about the pressures we all feel. And of course, goals are pressures for people. And you hit all the standard ones that really hit home for me, because it's how it's been ingrained for so long in me. The pressure not to waste a day, the time pressure, the pressure to keep up and have higher sales than you did last month. This whole idea of God gave you certain gifts, and if you don't fulfill them, then there's pressure. And you talk about how there's pressure not to be great.
Right.
Which hit home for me.
And that depends on that.
What do you mean by that?
Sure. It's really the community with which you surround yourself. And so, you know, there's that famous saying that you become the average of the five people that you're around.
Yeah.
Whether that's financially or whether that's, you know, in your philosophy and mental approach, we are somewhat indoctrinated into a way of being and thinking by the people we spend time with. And so if you're hanging out with a bunch of people who might not be excelling in their lives or flourishing, you might tone yourself down not to stand out or make them feel worse. But there's a flip side of that, which is, you know, if we put ourselves in too high a pressured environment and it's not really one that's serving us. And I've seen this a lot in the entrepreneurial market and the executive market, where people are, you know, they're just so worn down and unhappy. And I, you know, entrepreneurs talk a lot about freedom and salespeople talk a lot about freedom, but there's, you know, there's a lot of jail there. if they're not approaching it in a way that's, it's coming from within and having fun and, you know, life is too short otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you took me back for a moment while you were speaking to the weekend workshop that we did at your office in New York. And I don't know if you still do those workshops. They're amazing workshops for people who are aspiring speakers and coaches and just people who want to learn how to be more creative. And I think it's the experience of a lot of successful people. Is if you came from lower incomes like I did, there's this built-in feeling that people who are super successful got there by being mean-spirited and selfish, and they don't care about anybody but themselves. And not for the first time, when I was at that workshop, you know, these super high-powered people, all much more accomplished than me, were the kindest people. And as you rolled out certain skill sets, some of them were scared to death to speak in front of the rest of us, these amazingly accomplished people. And I thought about this, you've worked with a lot of CEOs, so have I. These CEOs tend to be the most accessible people in the world. They're not the idiots that you run into in the normal course of life. there's like this period where if you're just starting to show some material success, you get arrogant. And then if you get to that next level where you're truly doing something that you care about, this embracing the unknown that then results in success, then these people are just like okay with everything. Like they don't need to prove anything to anybody. And they just seem, I hate to throw on the word happy, because who's to say what's going on under the hood? But I don't want people to think that in order to be successful, you have to be some sort of difficult or arrogant person, because it hasn't been my experience. Do you agree with that?
I completely agree with that. And we're very in sync on that. You know, I spend time with Hollywood directors, I spend time with top executives, and I spend time with top entrepreneurs. So it's sort of the arts, entrepreneurship, executive level, and in sales as well, which I know is the sweet spot here for recruiters. And they are, the most successful ones have calmed down and they're focused, yeah, but they're quiet. Yes. You know, they don't yell a lot. They are thoughtful. There's a whole section in the book about indecision, and one of the biggest mistakes, I'm going a little off topic here, but it's important. You know, there's this illusion that we have that to be successful, you have to make decisions really quickly and you know, be always decisive. And all these top leaders that I've met, you know, they may make a decision quickly, but it comes with years of experience. And when they don't have the answer, they do their due diligence. And so, you know, it's the opposite of that image that we have of the leader with the flailing arms yelling this and that and go here and no, you know, they're much more grounded. Yeah. So it's an important distinction that you're making.
Yeah. And I've been managing people since I was in my mid 20s. And I think back to that person I was then, and I'm like, oh, these poor people. Because you say in the book that decisiveness is often overrated as a skill set. And I was like, man, that is guilty as charged, because I used to pride myself on, if you come in my office with a problem, you're gonna leave with an answer. So I'm a good decision maker, but I wasn't. I was good at making decisions. They just were often horrible decisions, right? So you confuse speed with quality. And it takes a long time, amazingly enough, to have the whatever, the self-esteem, the confidence, the world weariness to say, I don't know.
Exactly, exactly. And think of it for recruiting. I mean, a quick decision. You know, someone says, all right, I'll take the job, because they feel pressured.
Yeah.
The mistake, we all know this, you know, they always say, you know, hire slow, fire fast. But right. sometimes it's, you know, hire slowly. Because that is an exhausting and really costly mistake to bring in the wrong person or to set someone up in the wrong job. I mean, for so many reasons, we all know that. And, you know, if you just take a little more time, it saves so much on the back end.
Right, right. So there's people, I can feel it. There's people that are going to listen to this and they're going to get all fired up, especially when they read your book. And I'm trying to hold back, guys, because I keep referring it to a book and feel like I'm not being fair to Victoria, but there's visual elements to everything Victoria does. And there's visual elements that make this a really fun experience. And you learn a lot more because of the way the book is structured. But everybody's gonna be listening to this and go, okay, you sold me, I have an inner genius, I should embrace the unknown. How do I start? You know, and this is where I need your help, because I've been a writer my whole life. So to me, it's like I'm in a room. I lock the door, I close the windows, I look at a blank screen, and I wish I was doing something else, you know, because writing is hard, as you now know. So in the book, you say the early ideas look odd to you. You don't wake up and go, aha, this eureka aha moment just doesn't seem to happen unless you're in a movie. And you say that you should trust the idea that leads to the idea. And I think post-COVID, that's really important. Like, how would you recommend people start?
Yeah, well, the book is written, and I love how you keep calling it an experience, because that's the word we're hearing. So for anyone listening, I can't encourage you enough to get the hard cover. an audiobook, it's just not the same because it's like watching a movie without the pictures.
Yeah.
And even the ebook, it's good, but the physical book is like a beautiful piece of art in and of itself with the colors and the pages and the way it's written. And people who have gotten it are saying they're keeping it by their bedside. They're going to put it on their bookshelf. They're going to refer back to it. So it's that kind of a book you want to come back to. And to that point, you can open at any place in the book. As I say early on, you can read the book in any order and go to the parts that speak to you. So it's written almost like a reference guide. And to your question about where to start, you can actually start with any of these. There are 35 chapters and they're all about a half a page to 2 pages. They're super short. The whole book can be experienced in 90 minutes. It's very, very short, but it's very dense and powerful. So what people are finding is they just flip it open and they're like, oh, I need this, the prism effect, or oh, I need this, I'm struggling with the decision. Oh, I need this, I'm looking at ideas. And those are just three of some of the ones we've discussed here, but there are many, many more. But in a general way, what I do encourage people to do is to like you said, trust that idea that can lead to the next idea, because sometimes the wisp that you have is not the final end, but it's the thing that's going to guide you to the next place. And we often dismiss it because we go, well, where is that going? Or how's that going to work out? I mean, I have a client, she works at a 9-to-5, but she's coming to me and she wants to start doing stand-up comedy. But it's the pandemic, she's got 2 young kids at home, and she's already stopped herself because she's saying, how am I going to do it with 2 young kids? There are no comedy clubs open. And so she stopped already, instead of saying, well, let's see how it goes. You know, maybe it's a YouTube channel, maybe it's a new video series. And so that's what I'm talking about. You take that first step, which is what this book is. I didn't know how it was going to unfold. I have scores of examples. My clients have scores of examples where they started with something and it turned into something quite significant. As you've heard in the book, there's the story of the Blue Man Group. And we won't give it away, but the way it began with that little seed, no one could have anticipated it would turn into a multi-million dollar global enterprise.
Right, right. And you're 100% right that, I mean, I read the book and then over the weekend, I kept going back to an opening it again. And partly because you and I are friends and I was so happy for you and it was so awesome, but you just open it and then you get stopped in your tracks. For example, this one's so poignant for me. You know, you start when we're talking about New Year's resolutions and all this stuff that people do right around this time of year. But what you say in the book is, well, maybe you don't know what you want to do, but you should know what you don't want.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, yes. If somebody had said to me when I was younger, just make a list of the shit you don't want to do, as opposed to, you know, people saying to 21-year-olds, declare a major, which will affect you for the rest of your life, even though you not only have no right having a major, you have no right declaring anything at that point in your life. Like, you don't know anything. But anybody at any point in life can say, well, here's what I know I don't want, right? Yeah. I know I can't do that, or I know I don't want to do that. It's such a better question than, well, what do you want? You know, what would be great? That is so amorphous and vague, but that chapter just stopped me right in my tracks. I was like, yes, I could have formed a plan much faster had somebody just said, just talk about what you don't want to do. Things will show up.
Right. And it's I'm glad you're calling that out, because that question, there are 4 questions. That's the section of the book called 4 questions.
Yes.
And one of them, the fourth, is what don't you want? And there are other 3 that are very, very powerful. This what don't you want is profound because it also saves you time. Like, it immediately cuts out what's not feasible. I mean, on a personal note, you know, I got married very late in life, and you know, I'd done the whole thing. I dated the random construction worker. I dated the, you know, the bartender. I dated like the, you know, the guy 2 countries away. And I got to a point in my life where I was like, I don't want to do the struggling bartender. You know, I don't want to do the guy in the other country. Like, it became clear what I don't want. It's the same with my business. You know, we all have that with our business. Like, whether it's what clients won't you take on, or for the people who are recruiting, what for the person who you're helping, you can also say, what don't you want in a job, and find out right away from them if they're the right fit. Like if someone says, I don't want a lot of micromanaging, or I don't want a lot of this type of that type, or whatever those things are, right. It immediately clears out the riffraff. And you know already, okay, this is a fit or this is not a fit. And that applies across all of our lives, you know, personal and professional. It's a great question.
Yeah, no doubt. And for this particular marketplace, I mean, the recruiting industry has just exploded in the last few months, as I've been predicting for a few months. I think there's, you know, part of this is just the fact that the economy is no longer on pause. And part of it is the stimulus package. And for me, part of it is just the euphoria of waking up every morning and not knowing what the president is thinking or mean about or yelling at. But the point is, things are going amazingly for recruiting firms. And so companies are all trying to give us searches, but a lot of these searches are not good jobs. And if you take everything you can take, you're going to have a ton of bad jobs. And guess what? No candidate wants a bad job, and you won't end up making any placements. And it all comes back to saying, no, I don't do that. I you'll appreciate this as a speaker. I had a guy call me with a Southern accent not long ago, and he asked me if I could come down and speak. And I said, sure. And this is just before COVID. And he said, the thing is though, I've heard a lot about you, so I don't want any comments about divorces. I don't want any comments about politics. And I don't want any like really sarcastic comments about culture. And I was like, okay, that leaves me about 9 seconds of material. That's what, and 20 years ago, maybe like you, I would have said, okay, well, I'll clean it up, boss, you know, and I would have gone down to the speech. And I was like, you know what, there's a lot of vanilla speakers. Why don't you call one of them? I hung up the phone. And there's a freedom to that, right? Yeah. There's that's the reward for knowing you're not gonna feel good about yourself if you go down and censor yourself. So just say no. Just say
exactly.
No. And then exactly. What are you gonna do with that time that you would have, you'll fill in that time somehow.
Yeah, and it comes back to this idea we talked earlier about sort of full expression of who you are. I mean, this is what's made Danny Danny. I remember, and I talk about this a lot when I speak of you, and you and I have known each other many, many years, but I so admired, and I'm going to probably botch the story, so please forgive me, but you'll get the essence of it, and maybe everyone already knows this is how you are, who you are, but you told me once that you would hang up the phone when you'd gotten off with someone that sort of pissed you off, and you would sort of vent, and yep. Then what you changed is, no, I'm going to say that while I'm on the phone with them, like, are you going to take the job or not? Or whatever, right. You would just put them on the spot, and that's the Danny. And that's the according to Danny and the ask Danny and the part of Danny that we love. And it's what we adore about you. There is not an email I get from you where I'm not sort of laughing and guffawing. It's just, it's so great. And anyone, you know, lesser than you would have said, well, that's not appropriate. And I got to be like every other recruiter or, you know, manager or CEO at this point. But boy, are you brilliant. And I'm so glad you said no to that event.
In your name though, so just so you know. So let's talk about the mechanics here, because I really want people to, there's obviously gonna be a link in our site, but like everything else you do, you're creative about it. I know you've not only got a link to pre-order, but you also have like bonuses for people who order more than one copy for their businesses. You wanna fill people in on that so we can make sure people have access?
Yes. So you can certainly buy one copy. The way to do that is through the link that Danny and the team will include. It's riskforward.com/book. And we have all kinds of awesome bonuses, especially if you get it sooner rather than later. So definitely do not wait. However, we are finding without fail that anyone who has seen an advanced copy like Danny, they go, I'm getting 3 more. I'm getting 10 more. I've had people buy 10, 20, 50.
Totally.
So it's just that kind of book. And it's a fun book to give away because it's short, it's colorful, it's visual, it's not a burden. And so what we're doing is we've rewarded people who are buying 10 books. It's called the Book Circle. And there are a whole series of other bonuses. Including an on-camera workshop with me, had a risk forward on camera for you need to be different and expressive and really stand out in a fun way that's true to you. They get a signed original black and white galley. We have a whole series of listening skills workshop, which are critical for recruiters, for people in jobs. You know, that's one of the top three skills is listening. It's speaking, writing, and listening. And so I do a three-part video series on listening skills. All of these are part of the bonuses. So there's riskforward.com/book for one book and riskforward.com/circle if you want the 10-bet book deal. The last thing I'd say is for anyone here who runs an organization, when you buy a bigger bulk, I come and do a keynote or presentation. So that's for a limited time.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it is awesome. Thank you. Because, you know, normally it's a $25,000 fee. Oh, but yeah. Right now, as part of the launch, for anyone who's hearing this early, we're doing that bundled in. So when you buy a big batch, so reach out to the team. You can find our email on the website, and Danny, I'm sure, will include it for the company. But this is a fun book, and I'm just going to take another moment to share who the kind of people are who are loving the book, so it might trigger some thoughts. It is sales teams, it's executives, entrepreneurs, anyone who's an artist struggling with a new project. If you're leading a team into new territory, if you're in your own transition or know someone in a transition, whether that's a relationship transition, a health transition, a career transition, which is, of course, the recruiting world for the clients. And also we're finding two other populations are loving it. One are students who are just coming out of college. Mm. So if you have a niece or a nephew and they're trying to figure out what's next, yes. I'm going to be doing some graduation events. And then we also have the senior population who's loving the book for two reasons. One is because they can help the people they love, their grandkids, their kids, and they can be that kind of wise, noble voice through this book. Or secondarily, they're in that final phase of their life and they're thinking, what don't I want? What's next? How do I make the most of the time that I have? So I'm doing events for both ends of that population spectrum. And then, as I said, all these other types, entrepreneurs, artists, executives, sales teams, scientists. So it's a good book for anyone who's looking for their next step.
Yeah, no question about it. And I finished the book and called my sister and said, I'm getting this for my two nephews who are going into college, because I had that exact idea. It's like, it's funny that, like I said, things happen for a reason and things come at the right time. And look, we all write books and hope that the timing is good for the public to embrace it. But when you say, well, these people in transition, these people in transition, oh my God, did we not learn anything from COVID? We will all be in transition. And sometimes when you least expect it, and in a big way, and this book gives sort of a roadmap that you can return to whenever you're feeling that sort of stress and say, well, how did I do this last time? And what was that chapter about that touched me? I mean, we can't talk about all the chapters. There's a chapter on currents, inner currents. There's a chapter on myths and purpose that were it's just an amazing experience. And the last thing I want to say is that, like any good writer, there's a beginning, middle, and end. And at the end, you talk about how, you know, all of these decisions, whether or not to go in one path or another direction, whether you're going to unlock your hidden genius or not, at the end of the day, every single day, you say at the end of the book, you know, you're building a legacy that you will leave. And I just want you to know, young lady, that you are building an amazing legacy. And this is just the latest chapter. I'm just so happy for you.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm a little teary here. So thank you for that. That's very sweet.
All right. We'll let it go with that. We'll have the link on the website. And Victoria's been on our website forever, so you'll have ways to get in touch with her. Congrats and good luck on the book.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Victoria. Bye.